Hello and welcome. I am your host for the evening, Goblin Queen, and tonight we have some very interesting subject matter. And on top of that, I have guests. First, we have Alex, who is an artist and a lifelong experiencer, which the two so often go hand in hand, who I met by way of the Fairy Whispering podcast. Hey, Alex, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So Alex has had quite a few otherworldly experiences in his life, although tonight we're just going to focus on one in particular. But before he shares his story, let me introduce our second guest, who many people will know as the host of Strange Familiars, Timothy Renner. Tim, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So Tim, you of course are also an artist and have your own supernatural experiences throughout your life. So Not only do those qualities connect you to, but there's a very specific encounter that both of you had separately, and that's going to be the focus of our discussion tonight.
All right.
Alex, why don't you go ahead and tell us your story, please, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So, I have been having experiences my whole life, as you said, and some of my earliest experiences that I can recall at this time are of when I was about six or seven, somewhere around there. And I was in my bed late at night. I had a hard time falling asleep because I have insomnia and ADHD and all the things that keep one up late at night as a kid. And these are the times that I would have a lot of experiences where late at night in my bed. And I would have these little beings. They were probably about 2 to 2.5 feet tall. There was two or three of them, and they would always come in groups of two or three, and they would enter through my bedroom door, which I always had cracked with a light on because I was scared of the dark because I was having experiences, and I didn't know why, so I thought the light would help, but I believe there was a portal in my hallway that they came through because they always entered through that door. They would come and surround me in like a semi-arc, semicircle at the side of my bed, and they were very short. Their noses barely came up above the side of my bed. And this was like a little twin size bed for like toddlers or like young kids. So it was a small, it was very short down to the ground. So they couldn't have been very tall. They were wearing these little like 1950s paper doctor hats, the ones that look like little boats. I believe there was a red cross on the front. I just remember them telepathically speaking to me without speaking out loud. They would convey a sense of peace and like, we're here to help. You don't have to be scared of us. And then eventually I would black out and I would wake up the next morning and I would, that was the end of it.
You gave me permission to say this because it is anonymous, but you submitted this to the Fairy Census. So what that is academic research done by Dr. Simon Young, who's collecting data on the modern attitudes towards fairies. And when you fill that out, you fill out a survey and there's all these questions. So I wanted to mention some of the things that you checked off on there, which was a loss of sense of time, a profound silence before the experience, and hair prickling or tingling before or during the experience. So those are really common things, especially the profound silence, the Oz factors, what Jenny Randall's would call that. And you said they visited several times. Do you know how many times that would have been?
I just feel like they were a huge part of my childhood. Like they were a constant. Like I can't recall how many, but probably at least a dozen. It just felt like, oh yeah, those guys, every time they came, I like had a recollection of them from last time.
And I'm sorry if you already said this, but did you say how many there would be?
There was about 2 to 3.
Okay.
They always came in groups. Never one. It was always groups.
Mm-hmm. Any more than 3 ever?
Not that I recall, no. I think 3 was the most.
Mm-hmm.
Another question that's on the Fairy Census is it asks if there were any sounds or if there was any music, because there's a lot of music related to fairy experiences. And you wrote just the sounds of them doing their medical tests on me. I don't know if you remember what those sounds would have been or if you can describe them.
Not really. I don't remember.
That's okay. So they conveyed peace, but was it a peaceful experience or was it scary?
Looking back at it now, well, I actually did a regression session on this experience specifically. And I feel like they are like relatives of some sort, like some sort of, I'm not saying I'm like fairy or whatever, but I feel like they gave that sense of, we're here to take care of you. And we're sad that you're scared of us, but you'll understand one day type of thing.
It was scary at the time.
It was scary at the time. I would hide under the covers and wait for them to go away, but they never really went away. I would just black out once they were in my room and surrounding me with their little doctor things.
Now, you said you would black out. You mean like you would kind of go to sleep?
Yes.
Yeah. This is an ongoing beat on Strange Familiars that comes up a lot where people fall asleep when they have these things and there's no way they should be asleep. And you'll hear, I did so as well. There's no way I should have been falling back asleep, which for a long time I thought they had some kind of anesthesia and they were putting me out. But
yeah,
as the more paranormal accounts I gather, the more I'm like, no, this is just a thing that happens.
Yeah. I always thought that was an interesting point too. People can just black out. They're like, oh, I see a UFO. Well, time to go back to sleep. Like, what?
Yep. Heard stories of people like Bigfoot's looking in the window at me and they just turn, roll over and go to sleep. Like, no.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I believe them, but no. Like, that makes zero sense.
Yeah. And that's what makes me believe them even more, because so many people have that same exact experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something innate in us, like, nope. Don't want to fuck with that. Going back to bed.
My current, and you know, this is my theory. I could be wrong. My current theory is that the dreams are so much a part of this stuff, and it's easier for them to reach us in dreams. Mm. And they can get us in waking life, but it's easier for them to get in dreams. So they just put us out, and it's easier for them to work in dreams than waking life. But you know, just whatever.
As someone who has had multiple experiences in my dreams, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I truly feel that dreams are a major part of the paranormal experience that people are writing off.
Absolutely.
Not everybody, but often people are writing off, and I think it should be looked into more.
Agreed.
Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit before you came on, and also I've submitted a experience of the fairy senses, and it was a dream, but I considered it a real experience.
I mean, again, just to reiterate, I think dreams are important. Now, obviously, we have big dream, little dream kind of thing. Some dreams are just your processing what happened in the day and whatever. It is what it is. But you have these big dreams, and I think people know when you have them. You know, like, oh, this is something meaningful and important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. To me, they feel, those big ones, they feel, I mean, there is a very different vibe to them. They feel, they look very cinematic, and they feel like they're on a grander scale, just like in a physical sense. Like, I feel like I'm small in like a big world.
Mm-hmm. I've described them as like more real than waking life in a way.
Yes,
right.
They're like, they're so vivid and so like
more real than real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Speaking of the fairy census, I was so curious. This is something I mentioned when I read your story too, I think, Alex. What made you submit it to the fairy census? Because I don't know if everyone who had it would overtly go there. Was it because of their stature, or do you categorize them as fairies?
I believe they are dwarves, and I just, I think that dwarves and fairies, and they're all under the umbrella of fae, and I think they're all just like part of this other world that most of us can't see, but some of us can see glimpses of throughout our life that help us keep that magic alive in our hearts.
Why do you think they showed up as doctors? Do you have any guesses?
Well, the story that made me remember this experience in the first place was of someone else who also had an abduction experience, but it wasn't of little doctors. They were of fairies. And they told him that they were activating his DNA, his fairy DNA. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with that, but who knows? Only they know. but I believe that I was supposed to remember them for some reason. Like, it was supposed to be so deep in my mind that I would be able to pull it out one day when I needed it, which is probably now.
Do you know when they stopped? When the doctor's visits stopped?
I probably had them for a good year straight. I felt like they come back every couple months and check in on me. But probably not longer than a year.
Interesting.
Like they had like a series of vaccines to give me in that time or something, you know? I don't know.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
Yes, multiple times.
And did you have it in conjunction with that or just in like later on in life?
Now looking back at it, and especially after doing my regression, it does feel like a sleep paralysis experience. Because I was always very terrified, couldn't really move, laying on my back, you know, can't speak or call for my mom. So it hits a lot of the markers of a sleep paralysis. And throughout the years, I've had sleep paralysis experiences with both positive and negative entities. So,
Yeah. And I should say, when I say sleep paralysis, that's not me saying it's not real.
Yeah.
I fully believe sleep paralysis is a, maybe like a flare that's sent up, sure, there's a medical explanation for sleep paralysis, but so many of these entities come to people when they're in that state. It may be a flare that gets sent up and they're like, oh, okay, now there's somebody over there we can mess with. I don't know.
There's someone in a vulnerable state. Let's see what fun we can have with them today.
Yeah. Or it might be a result of something they're doing too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned that you think that it's easier for them to do whatever they need to interact or whatever in dreams. And isn't the medical explanation for sleep paralysis is you're in a dreaming state, but your eyes open?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, there you go.
And you're in an awake, alert state, but not sleeping.
Yeah.
Like you never really fell asleep in the first place type of
thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But your body's paralyzed like it's supposed to be when you're sleeping. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any other questions for Alex, Tim?
I'll probably think of some more as we go along here, but.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've told your story.
I'd love to hear Tim's story.
Yeah, if you don't mind. I know you've told it a lot on your own podcast, but
yeah,
we'd love to hear your story if you can.
Sure, yeah. So mine starts, I'm in college, so I'm a good bit older. I do have things from when I was young, when I was a kid, and the only thing I really remember about them is I thought, really until I got into the paranormal pretty hardcore, I thought this was a series of recurring dreams. And in these dreams, I would wake up and I would hear something. I would hear entities downstairs. I assume there were three, and I don't know if I heard three different voices or what, but I remember always thinking there's three. And at the time, I thought they were witches. There was one library close. I grew up on a farm. There was one library in the next town over, and it was like a tiny room full of books, this library. It wasn't a big library, but they had this Man, Myth, and Magic series about witchcraft and myths and stuff. And even as a very young child, like my mom would let me get, it was an encyclopedia set, basically. I'd get like one of them or two of them every time from the library. And I just read through, I'd go A to Z and start over at A again. I love that series. So I think it was probably the influence of that, that I for some reason I thought they were witches. And I could hear them downstairs. This wasn't other people in my family. I know the normal family sounds and stuff. And I remember thinking, they can't know I'm up here and awake, and I have to be quiet and still. And there was a language I couldn't understand. They were speaking back and forth. And like I said, there was three of them. I thought this was a recurring dream, and I maybe had this, I don't know, less than 10 times, probably 5-6 times, something like that throughout my childhood. Enough, though, that it stuck in my head. Later on, I went, I wonder if there's something more to that, because, well, the event you had me on to talk about happened when I was in college. And I was living in the basement of my girlfriend's mother's house at the time. So I have the whole basement to myself. And I started hearing what I thought were people outside the house, walking around at night or something. I would wake up and I would hear these voices. Again, couldn't make anything out. And I remember I went up to them. It was, I think, her family was, I think there was five people living upstairs. And I went up and I said, hey, make sure your car doors are locked. There's people walking around outside at night. I can hear them. I said, okay, whatever, you know. Then I started waking up and feeling like people were in the room with me. And I thought, well, okay, this is, I'm just still hearing them and it's getting in my dreams and I'm, you know, scared when I wake up. I think the people are in the room. So I took my bed and I moved it to an interior room, no windows, like in the middle of the basement, basically. There's no windows, nothing. And I would still wake up and feel like something was in the room with me every now and then, but, you know, whatever. I just, at this point, I'm thinking bad dreams or whatever. Anyway, one night I wake up, I can't move. And I'm able, I was sort of three quarters onto my side, onto my left side. But I was looking this, you know, to my right, and I could see three figures there. And it's really interesting that Alex is talking about 1950s doctor's outfits, because mine, I always thought, well, they look like they're wearing 1920s doctor's outfits. They had the buttons up the side and the hats, the, you know, the same kind of pillbox hats, I guess, and like cloth masks and stuff. I remember like old timey doctors, they were dressed like, and there were three of them and they were doing something. I don't know what they were doing. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me rude things due to alien abduction stuff. No, it wasn't anything like that to my knowledge. But whatever they were doing was upsetting me. I was very, very angry. And all throughout this experience, by the way, I would keep falling asleep and I'd wake up and they'd still be there. And I'd fall asleep again and I'd wake up. I can't say that I've ever been as angry at anything in my entire life. I was just completely, completely enraged. And people talk about mind speak. I didn't really hear a voice in my head. Well, I'm kind of struggling. I'm kind of thinking like you don't have any right to do this or something along those lines. And I got an answer, but it was more like a brush off. It was just like a, like, we don't care, you know, like we're going to do what we're going to do. And again, this wasn't mind speak. It was just like a feeling like, nope, it's like too bad, buddy. Kept falling asleep, waking up and angrier and angrier and angrier. And then finally I was able to move. I woke up, I screamed and I threw a punch to that side of the bed as hard as I could. No, but nothing was there. I didn't connect with anything. Screamed at the top of my lungs. And I have a loud voice when I need it to be loud. It's a very loud voice when I want it to be. Completely embarrassed. I waited till a normal time of the morning, you know, where people would be up upstairs. And I went up and I said, I'm so sorry about screaming last night. I had a bad dream, what I thought was a bad dream. And of those five people that lived up there, not a one heard me. Not a one heard me.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Very, very strange. And I sat with this as a bad dream for a long time, maybe, I don't know, a few months. In between this time, I started seeing Whitley Strieber's Communion book. It was very popular at the time in bookstores and stuff. And I would look at that cover and I would say, oh, I hate that. I don't know what that is. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't like that, whatever it was. And a little while after that, one of these evening news programs, I don't know if it was 2020 or whatever the old evening news programs were, they were doing a story on abduction phenomenon. And I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. I'll watch it. And to this day, I don't know if they had a reenactment or witness drawings or whatever it was, but it was drawings of these grays by people's bed. And when I saw that with that reenactment, or like I said, reenactment drawing, I don't remember, but whatever it was, my heart just sank. And I knew right then, oh no, that's what they were. And the doctor thing was just a screen memory. Very disturbing. And it upset me a lot because it was way easier to deal with just a dream, you know, than whatever all that is. And abduction, I don't believe I ever left my bed. I think these are somehow out of body experiences. I think these things are able to pull you out of body and do whatever they want, take you wherever. And I honestly think that's way scarier than a physical abduction, if they can just pull you right out of your body. So that was it. Those were my doctors. I can see them. I can see the doctor's uniforms, but I really see them more as the grays now. It's like I said, I think it was a screen memory and that kind of fell away. But I do remember like the doctors well enough I remember the old timey outfits and all that.
And they were short stature.
Yeah. Yeah, not as short as Alex's, probably 4 to 5 feet tall, that kind of range. I remember, and I put that together later because I had a bed that was sat a little bit higher, probably than a normal bed, and their chests were there above the bed. So later on, I put together, oh, they would have been short. You know, they weren't bending over to do whatever they were doing. They were almost even with me, you know.
Was it just the one time with the doctors that you know of?
With the doctors.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I've been visited by Grays many, many times, other times. And we have a very contentious relationship.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, I know how to deal with them now. I can make them go.
Oh, how do you do that?
Well, this is, and I have to preface this by saying what I'm about to say, this applies to many different forms of spirituality. I happen to be Catholic, but Jewish people have the same results. Other Christians have the same results. Wiccans have the same result. Buddhists have the same result. I'm not trying to say what I believe in is, you know, right or whatever. There's a spiritual component to this. What that is, I don't know. I don't know if they have to respect it or what. But for me, I say the Hail Mary and they're gone. Done. They're gone. And I don't think they're demons. That's not what I'm trying to imply. Not at all. But I think they somehow, I don't know. There's something about that. Maybe it's just that these spiritual practices center people. I don't know. But whatever it is, you know, it stops them. And like I said, I've heard people from all different faiths say the same thing. You know, they'll put up symbols or pray within their faith and it'll stop it.
I think it's all about believing that you have the power over them in your faith. Because each person believes their faith with their whole heart and soul. And if they're demanding this other being with their whole heart and soul, like, get away from me, I have the power.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I've had people say, well, you know, it's an initiation experience. You should just let it happen. To that, I say, they didn't come to me as equals and say, hey, this is what we want to do. They didn't talk to me about this.
Right.
We didn't. I have no consent in this. You want me to do something? You talk to me about it. Let's have a discussion and we'll discuss consent. And then I'll decide whether I want to go through that or not. Until then, I am banishing them every time. Goodbye, suckers.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So you also had three. Is that why you were curious about it, Alex?
Yep. Yeah, it was three.
Yeah.
And most of the time when I have an encounter with Grays, there's been two or three. I had one particularly crazy one where I couldn't even count how many there were. It was absolutely bats get, but that was just the one. It was a very bizarre one. They were dressed as sort of in Native American ritual gear, but if you can imagine, it was all made out of like Day-Glo plastic and with like Day-Glo feathers, and it was
bizarre.
Yeah, crazy. They were dancing around in a circle in the room. I fell asleep in this room. It's not where I normally slept at the time. I just fell asleep there. Woke up. Sat up, saw these things dancing around. It's the only time I didn't banish them because they were making me laugh. They were being goofy. And I was like, you know, this is funny. You know, so I'm almost like smirking and, you know, almost laughing at them. I'm trying to figure out what is going on. What are they doing? And then I don't remember waking up. They were just gone. And then the most bizarre part of it, maybe other than, you know, Grays dressed in weird Day-Glo outfits, was that a moth, and this is in December and all moths should be gone by then, a moth, a big moth, flew right to my right ear, landed on my ear and buzzed. So I got the buzzing sound that's reported in fairy encounters and UFOs and stuff, but from a moth, like from this very, like, I, you know, and just sat on my ear, and I kind of gently flicked it away. I absolutely love moths. I would never hurt one. And I wanted to see what kind of moth it was. I kind of gently flicked it away. It flew somewhere. I've never found that moth. And it, like I said, it was a big one. It was like a two inches long moth or so. And I don't know what kind it was. I'm a moth guy. Would love to know what kind of moth it was, but never found that moth again. But it was very, very strange that I got the, you know, the buzzing sound that so many people report, but it was from a moth in my ear.
I have many fairy moth experiences myself, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we have a few different similar experiences overlap.
You mentioned actually in the episode that of Strange Familiars that you put out today, you were talking about Luna moths, which I thought was so cool because I've never seen a Luna moth and I would love to. And I love moths too, so yeah, that's cool that it came up today.
Yeah, I have a Luna Moth in. So I have a little case with a cast of a 5-toe Bigfoot track, a 3-toed track of whatever that was. And I also have a Luna Moth, you know, the one I found deceased, sitting in there. I absolutely love them.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I guess they're everybody's favorite because they're so big and beautiful, but they're still my favorite. I love them.
My experience was with an imperial moth, which is a giant 3 to 4 inch yellow and brown moth.
Oh, yeah. They're beautiful, too.
Oh, yeah. Those are striking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't leave me hanging.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I found a moth on its back in the middle of a dirt road when I was walking my dog. And I went over to look at it because I thought it was dead, but I found it was still moving. So I went over to the side of the road and found a stick, and I flipped it over on top of my phone and moved it over to a log on the side of the road. And then I kept on walking with my dog. And then out of nowhere, like 3 to 7 butterflies and moths came out of nowhere and like floated around me as if they were like thanking me for helping their friend.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I believe that they were fairies because they had like, I don't know, they had some sort of like magical sense to them that was more than just moths.
Yeah, I understand that. Sometimes you come across seemingly normal animals, but they just feel, they feel different. I have that with deer a lot.
Mm-hmm. It happens with people sometimes too. You come across these people that are just...
I'm really interested in that, Tim. And I know you call them unpeople, and yeah. I love that. I'm really interested in those experiences.
Yeah, they're just, it's like, well, they're still, yeah, seem to be a normal person, but something odd. I'm very odd about it.
I believe I've met a vampire, and I'm a karaoke host. So most of these people I'm only seeing at nighttime. And there's this one guy, and he had like exceptionally long canine teeth. And he was very pale and very old and wrinkly. And his name was Mixture. That was what he would go by, Mixture. And I don't know, he would just be really, really strange. And then this one time I was like, are you a vampire or something? And he just looked at me and smiled real big and didn't answer. And I was just like, uh-huh, I feel it. You are something.
Interesting. I have one. I'll probably, I don't know if I'll tell, maybe later if we have time. I have one that was a fiddler that I'm not sure what was going on with that. But going back to Tim's story, it was weird how it progressed from starting to hear people talking. And was it an unknown language or was it just quiet and unintelligible?
It's hard to say now.
Yeah.
I can only say at the time I didn't understand it. Probably at the time I would have said, oh, they were just outside and, you know, I couldn't hear them well enough. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's a question mark for that for me because I'm like, again, thinking back to the quote unquote witches, you know, from when I was a child, that was definitely a language I couldn't understand. And I wonder if there's, you know, was there something else going on there?
Mm-hmm. That's so spooky. I've had this happen. I had it happen when I was a kid, mostly, not really. I don't know if I've had it as an adult, where I would be laying in bed and I would hear, it sounded like someone, people were talking in the apartment above me, but there wasn't an apartment above me. We were on the top floor. So kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yours was definitely not a pleasant experience.
No, no, I wasn't happy about it.
And I have a question that's kind of a loaded question that you aren't going to be able to answer, but I'm just curious what you think, because you said you don't think you left your bed. It was an abduction experience, but you didn't leave your bed, which I feel the same way. I haven't had any kind of what I would deem like an ET or a gray experience, but I feel the same way that I don't know if there's an extraterrestrial element to it. But that makes me wonder, what do you think grays are then if they aren't extraterrestrial, which is what a lot of people kind of assume?
Yeah, I definitely don't. They're not little scientists from another planet. I truly believe that. I'm at the point where I just call everything the other. And I put it all, I think it's all manifestations of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Bigfoot, you know, fairies, whatever, it's all manifestations of the other. It's taking different forms for whatever reason. I don't know, maybe it's reaching into our head and using part of our imagination to make the stuff form. I don't know, but I think, you know, I'm very much on the train that the alien abduction experience and the fairy abduction experience are one-to-one comparison. You know, we might overlay some sci-fi stuff on it nowadays, but really, it's pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm. They do have very similar overlap.
Right. Something that Jacques Vallée has made, you know, an argument for a long time. And So I that was something that grabbed me, not just the similarity between your guys' experience, but just that one was fairy and one was grays. And
it doesn't surprise me. And it honestly, it doesn't make a difference that, to me at this point. So it's all coming from the same place as Brother Richard says. It's all using the same channels to get through all this stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's manifesting in very similar ways.
Yeah, I myself can get a little caught up in the weeds of trying to categorize everything when it's probably kind of useless to do that. It's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. Like, you know, I think, you know, bless them. You know, these folks who think Bigfoot's a flesh and blood creature, you know, and they're trying to approach things in a quote unquote scientific way. I have a problem with their use of what they call science and how that pans out. But, you know, I don't fault them for starting there. That seems to be the logical place to start. But the more you get into it and the weirder these accounts get, to me, it's like, now this thing's very, very strange. It's not a normal animal. And then you start looking at things like glowing eyes. That's one of my favorite things to point out. What has glowing eyes? Look all over the world for any animal that has glowing eyes. To my knowledge, there isn't one. Maybe there's a deep sea fish or something that might, I don't know. But as far as mammals and certainly higher order primates, nothing has glowing eyes. Think about it. It would ruin your night vision. But what does have glowing eyes? Go back through time. Fairies, vampires, werewolves, all these legendary creatures our ancestors told us about had glowing eyes.
Yeah, black dogs and hellhounds and things like that.
Yep. Exactly. There you go. So when people in these modern accounts are like, yeah, I saw this big hairy monster with glowing eyes, but it was just a gorilla. No. Nope. Not to me. I'm thinking this falls right in line with all these other things. So not to get off on a tangent, but that's just to illustrate how I think all this stuff kind of originates from one place. And that's, you know, it's the other. So fairies, grays, doesn't matter what name you give them to me, Bigfoot, they're all something that's very similar, coming from the same place, maybe.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back another time to talk about Bigfoot, because I really didn't put any stock into Bigfoot. Just, I don't know, it's kind of the culture surrounding Bigfoot too. It just really turned me off. And I was like, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I heard Alex, a different Alex who you had on your show, about the Uwaris.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God. Like, that really, when I heard the weirder explanation for Bigfoot, I was like, oh, I'm on board now.
Yeah. I think Patrick Harper, I might get the quote wrong, who wrote Daemonic Reality, which is like my number one recommended book for anybody who's interested in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He said Bigfoot is, I think the quote is, just a big hairy fairy. I'm there.
I love,
you know,
that.
And if you look at the old fairy reports, they weren't all little, you know, Tinkerbells.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Sometimes they were giant, you know, they could change.
Yeah,
full-sized humans.
Yeah.
Or more.
Right. The gentry.
Some of them are to little Tinkerbell fairies, though. Some of them are little light orbs. I've had many light orb experiences that seem intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
Not just like some, you know, I've seen my cats chasing them on home videos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the light phenomenon goes right across the board, too. You know, as Thrive from Where Did the Road Go says, I'll steal this from him because I love it. Light in the woods is Bigfoot. Light in the sky, it's UFO. Light in the house, it's haunted house. You know, it's a ghost. They're all lights. They're all lights, you know?
Mm-hmm. Light is the fastest way to travel.
Do you want to go over this other story I found, or?
Sure, we can.
Let's do it.
Okay.
And where's this from again?
This is from, it's from the website called Your Ghost Stories, and it took place in California.
Okay.
This story was submitted by Spirit Energy. It's called Curious Little Doctor and Nurse. My husband and I raised our 5 kids in a 2-story, 3-bedroom, 3-bath home. Upstairs were the bedrooms, with the master being the size of the entire downstairs living room. We had a lock on our bedroom door. Our teenage daughters would hijack my husband's t-shirts to wear. So, when we were gone for work during the day, or were out during the evening, nobody was in our room. Our kids used to tell us that they would quite often hear footsteps in our room. They would hear them day or night. We would hear them sometimes too, if
we were downstairs eating dinner or watching TV. We would go look, and nothing. But that's all that ever happened. Footsteps don't hurt, no big deal. One night, while I was sleeping, I woke up. No reason, I just woke up. I was on my back and opened my eyes. I turned my head to look at my husband. He was there, sleeping, his back facing me. I looked at the ceiling and noticed a white light to my right side. It was low to the ground, so I turned my head and looked for the source. There, standing right at the side of my bed, right next to me, were a little doctor and a little nurse. The doctor stood about 3 feet tall, if that, and appeared to be operating on my leg. He was an old man, looking about 80. He had a big nose and long chin. He was mostly bald, with wisps of hair here and there. His nurse stood behind him, looking over his shoulder as he operated. She had gray hair pulled back in a bun. She looked about 80 as well, and was wearing a long black dress with a white apron over it, and a white nurse's hat. The dress reminded me of the first nurse's uniforms way back. I was shocked, not scared. I felt no fear at all, just surprise. I wondered, what the hell is this guy doing? And I didn't feel what he was doing to my leg. It just looked like he was doing something to it. Because I couldn't feel it, I wanted to see it better. I'm just a curious person. I have to know. So, what do I do to see it better? I sit up, of course. And as I'm raising my head from the pillow and bringing my arm up to support me, this doctor turns and looks directly at me, grins at me with a mouth full of very many sharp, pointed teeth, gives me a sort of grunt, and punches me with his fist right in my right eye. I let out a gasp. I actually couldn't believe that just happened. I paused a minute to feel the punch on my eye. Was it real? Was there pain? I felt pain, but it wasn't like the punch I got in my eye when I was 12 from the boy next door. That hurt. This was dull pain. That's the only way to describe it. It hurt, but it was dull. I looked over at my husband to see if he saw this. He had to have heard this, right? Nope. I saw his back, just like when I first woke up. Okay, then. What do I do now? What could I do? So, I laid my head back down on the pillow. I decided that if my husband wasn't awake and this thing didn't want me to get up, then I wasn't going to. I wasn't scared or hurt, really. I looked back at the two little beings without moving my head because I didn't want to get hit again. Yep, still there. Okay, then. I closed my eyes and went back to sleep. I haven't had anything like that happen to me since. We lived in that home for another 7 years after this happened. We moved from that home 10 years ago. I've thought about that night a lot, trying to figure out what it could have been, because I know it wasn't a dream. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing, you know, look, we all talked about how they were dressed out of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something I want to talk about that.
Makes me think of Men in Black, right? They show up there in like cars from the 1950s or whatever, and you know their suits are from some time past, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's something about that too.
Yeah. Well, you said that, Alex said that, this person said that, old-timey clothing. And I was interested in that because the Men in Black's a good point. Also, for going with the fairy theory, fairies are most often seen wearing antiquated clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to look into what era these uniforms are from, Alex's with the white cross, and these, she describes black dress with a white apron. And apparently nurses didn't wear any of these.
What?
These are not actual historical nurse uniforms. The Red Cross was displayed on the nurse's apron, but the hats were generally just plain white.
Mm.
The hat with a red cross is a modern costume invention.
Interesting.
And then apparently nurses were never known to wear black as it was considered a depressing color and assigned with mourning. But you can do an internet search for nurse uniform, black dress, white apron, and you'll find costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't give that information to invalidate your experience. I find it really interesting because in that way, whoever, whatever you saw was literally wearing a costume.
Right.
Or possibly pulling subconscious images from your mind on what a nurse outfit should look like.
Mm-hmm.
Tim's case, head mirrors were a real instrument used by doctors. But again, it's kind of a costumey, exaggerated,
right,
archetypal image. Like if you look up a stock photo of a doctor, they're going to be wearing that. So,
yep.
Or even a costume from Screamers. You know, it'll have a probably a doctor with one of those.
Right. Go get some cheesy Halloween costume, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really strange.
That is very interesting. It's like they have their own little intergalactic costume store that they go to when they come to come right. to have little experiences. They're like, what costume should I wear today?
Yeah, or like they pull from archetypal images. Mm-hmm. With the Men in Black, I mean, it's like a cheesy FBI costume or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was not, she says she wasn't scared. She was surprised. What was really weird was the sharp pointed teeth, the mouthful of teeth. That was.
Mm-hmm. That is very creepy.
Yes.
Don't seem like a nice smile.
No. A lot of people and then I always read the comments on here because it's a forum. A lot of people actually do suggest fairies and elves and trolls and goblins,
mm-hmm.
partly because of their stature, but also just because of their strange and unpredictable character.
Well, I really do believe that mine are not grays, and I believe that they are dwarves or elves or some sort of fey creature.
Yeah, I think you said gnomes in your account.
Gnomes. Yeah, gnomes or dwarves. I'm split between the two because I know they're similar, but there's also differences. But they had beady, small beady eyes and really big, like comically big noses. I'll send you a picture of one of my garden gnomes that looks a lot like what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But yeah, they had little beady black eyes and really big noses, like exaggeratively big for their face.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the faces looked like for yours, Tim?
They were wearing doctor's masks. Like I said, originally they had the...
masks.
Mm.
What about the nose? Was that covered?
Yeah.
It was probably covered.
Yeah. I mean, and then, like I said, once I, you know, I feel like it's a screen memory. Now, they're just grays, just your typical gray kind of standing there, creepy things.
They have tiny noses.
Yeah. Yeah, barely anything.
Lots of people did also suggest that the OP of that story get their leg checked that the doctor was working on. And for the record, they do say that they didn't have any issue prior or following the experience. They didn't notice anything different about it and they didn't feel whatever they were doing.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember feeling anything either. I just remember feeling weary of them because I was like, who are these people that are coming into my room at night? This is not cool.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't remember feeling anything either.
I thought it was strange that a lot of people commented and thought it was funny and thought it was amusing that the doctor punched her in the eye, but I thought that was a weird reaction. I didn't think it was funny at all.
That's fucked up.
Yeah,
it's not funny at all. I think it's more of a psychic punch though. It's like he psychically mm-hmm. punched her out.
I'm coming back. I'm not right. I'm not taking that punch, but
mm-hmm.
if I can move enough to sit up, I'm fighting back. I'm swinging on the doctor too.
Didn't you say you swung?
I swung. Yeah, yeah. There was nothing there. I was so mad and I swung so hard that when my kids were little, I used to tell them because I was afraid it would happen again,
mm-hmm.
and I would tell them to stand at the door and call my name. Don't come over and shake mm-hmm. me. Yeah. I was so afraid I was going to do that again.
Right.
If anybody was there, I mean seriously, I threw that punch so hard. I think I would have knocked anybody out, and I couldn't like. Just terrified that I'd be in like some kind of sleep paralysis thing and my kids would come up. So I just like, no, just you stand at the door and call daddy's name until I wake up. Don't come up and shake me.
Yeah.
And it was all because of that one time. That's how much that affected me.
Mm. Wow.
So again, it also came up that they went back to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they do follow up on that. In the comments, they said, when I think about it now, it is frustrating that I went back to sleep. I could have gotten some more information, perhaps.
It is so frustrating.
They were very calm because they didn't believe it until they were punched, and then they just felt like they weren't supposed to be awake, so they went back to sleep. And Someone makes an interesting point that they say, well, to the outsider, it seems so bizarre that they just went back to sleep. But from their own experience in strange situations like this, it catches you off guard and you just don't really know how to respond. That kind of makes sense to me. I don't know if that...
It's like a freeze, flight, or flight, you know? We get stuck in the freeze and we just black out.
I think it's part of the experience. I think it's just like whoop, you go to sleep now. Boop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a different site. I don't know. Some people do find, Tim, that some people actively feel like they're choosing to go back to sleep, and then some people black out, like Alex.
Definitely wasn't my choice.
Yeah, I feel like, and like I said, for me, I really thought it was anesthesia because it, like, I went out so quickly, and I thought like, oh, they keep putting me under with anesthesia, which is funny because I kept waking up, and anesthesia doesn't work well on me. I've woken up in the middle of surgery before. Mm.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's not a fun thing.
No.
I couldn't speak. And I was having hernia surgery and I'm like groaning. Mm. And they finally heard me and put me back under. And I've had the follow-up afterwards. I was talking to the surgeon and I said, hey, just so you know, I woke up during that surgery. He said, no, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. And it hurt bad. And I said, he said, no, that's impossible. You didn't wake up. And he thought I was going to sue him.
Probably. Don't tell me it's not.
I said, look, I'm not going to sue you. I just want a note in my medical record so if, you know, people can keep an eye on me if I ever have surgery again. And he's like, well, you didn't wake up. I said, I did wake up. Your nurse was talking about her vacation. And he was so shocked. He looked at me, his eyes got real wide, and he just looked down and started like writing in the file again. He knew. Mm-hmm. I could tell he knew I woke up during that. So it is odd. Like, I do have odd reactions to anesthesia. Mm. But no, I don't think they were using anesthesia on me. You know, I think it was... whatever these things do. Mm. And that's based on, like I said, so many other people, you know, to have the same thing. I was like, yeah, I fell asleep. Okay.
I've heard people with red hair are resistant to anesthesia.
Hmm.
I don't know why. Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, I could get in the weeds about categorizing, but I would liken these stories to the bedroom invader experiences that John Keel describes, mm-hmm. which is as simple as waking up and seeing a strange person in your bedroom, but beyond that, what they are, I don't know. I don't think they personally sound like ghosts, though.
No. In fact, I think, you know, this is a book that I'm probably going to have to write someday, but I'm dreading it. I think most of what people say are ghosts are not the spirits of dead people. I really don't. I think there's lots of spirits out there that are willing to take on different roles, and I think it's probably pretty rare to actually have an actual, like, you know, spirit of a dead person, ghost. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's mm-hmm. a lot rarer than people think. I think these are often other things, you know.
I agree. That's kind of like the Bigfoot thing for me. It's like when I was growing up, that's the main thing you hear about is ghosts. So I was a big believer in ghosts and I like ghost hunting and stuff like that. And then now I'm like, I'm way more likely to believe in something strange than a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of experiences growing up and thought that I lived in a haunted house, and I'm not saying I didn't have experiences, but I don't know if they were ghosts. That's what I thought when I was a kid, but I don't really know if that's what they were now.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much crossover between this phenomena, you know, the Class B Bigfoot experience is a one-to-one comparison to the poltergeist experience. Mm-hmm. It's just in the woods instead of in the houses. Stones being thrown happens in poltergeist experiences. Bad smells, poltergeist, unknown language, poltergeist. It's a one-to-one. It's absolutely one-to-one. When people don't see a creature, but they have these other experiences, and people go, oh, it must have been Bigfoot. Well, but it's exactly like the poltergeist experience. You know, these things are, I think, far weirder than people want to go to usually. And I do think that applies with ghosts. I think there's a whole ecosystem of spirits out there, and many of them are willing to pretend to be whatever you want. And if that gets the reaction, if that gets the interchange, yeah, I'll be the ghost of, you know, whoever is supposed to live here. People are putting that energy into it. Sure. Fine. You know, at least I get to interact with people or whatever they're trying to get.
Older guys are people too, right?
I want a shirt that says that. I'll design this one.
Cool. Awesome. Quickly, I was looking over John Keel, one of his articles he wrote. It's called Bedroom Invaders. It's a little misleading because it's probably pre-Mothman because it's just he's throwing different stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Tim knows that. I'm sure he's read it, but you know that he talks about Flannel Man, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That blew my mind.
There were a few people talking about it before I did not invent that concept. It just, you know, I started talking about it and I started getting so many accounts. But he talks about it there. He talks about it in Mothman Prophecies.
Yeah, briefly.
In fact, I think he adapted some of that same essay maybe into Mothman Prophecies, maybe.
I think so. Yeah. It seems like it.
Yeah. But he and a couple other people were mentioned it before.
Yeah, that's crazy. The man in plaid.
Some of them called them like checkered ghosts and stuff in the past too. So,
right.
Yeah.
What's your guys's like state cryptid that's most popular in your state?
We do have, I'll have to ask him about it. I don't know anything about it. I know there's a Missouri monster. I don't know if you know anything about it, but
Momo. Yeah. That's a great account. That is a great account.
Oh, really? Okay.
That is so, you got to dig deep on that one because the Bigfoot people are so invested in making it appear just like a gorilla that they cut out the weird stuff.
Mm.
But if you dig deep on it, there's so much weird stuff with Momo. It is so strange.
Mm.
It's amazing. There's like very, very strange things with it. I love that account.
Oh, cool.
So Pennsylvania, you know, look, lately people are very onto the squonk because it's cute, I guess, that crying pig thing. But that's not, no one ever.
I don't know about the squonk.
Look, the way things are, I'm sure people are going to start reporting squonk sightings because now it's in the popular culture and this happens.
Mm-hmm.
But
we have something similar here called the Smeet Frog.
Yeah. It was a fictional creature that somebody put in a book called something of the lumber, Beast of the Lumber. I forget.
Like a fearsome critter kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's the one. Okay. Yeah. Fearsome Critters in the North Woods or something like that. Yeah. And I don't think anyone really had claimed to see it before then, but, you know, people are calling it a cryptid now. Albatwitch, that's the one, that's the our little person. I would say that's a very Pennsylvania thing. It's Alba, by the way, is German for elf.
Aww.
People say, oh, it means apple snitch, but no, it's a Germanic thing. So Albatwitch, these little hairy people. And
love that. Little hairy fairies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love that.
Yeah, I heard about that on your show and I was like, wow, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But the most interesting part about little people is that there's accounts of them throughout all continents, throughout all the world, all of history, there's been little people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every culture, to my knowledge, every culture has little people.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every culture has a wild man. I can't say every culture without a doubt, but you know, there's something to it, you know.
They're a distinct part of our human history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And still there.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Not being acknowledged.
Right. When I talk about, you know, the folklore of our ancestors.
But they're probably better off because humans ruin everything.
I always like to point out that when I say folklore, I don't mean fiction. These mm-hmm. are stories that our ancestors handed down to us. This is how you deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who sings traditional folk songs, like we have a saying in that world that a bad song doesn't get to become traditional.
Ooh.
Kind of the same thing. It's like bad information doesn't become traditional. These stories are passed down for a reason.
Yeah. And the root of the word mythology means like ancient history, as far as I know.
Yeah. And I always say like mythology is for the priests and folklore is for the people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Folklore is information of the community, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Knowledge passed along the community.
I like that.
Definitely. But I mean, as far as I'm aware, you know, like it happens for Tim on his show. Maybe we'll get some more. But as far as I know, the little doctors and nurses is very specific. And I've really only found these three so far. Although, Tim, you did have someone on recently who had a cartoon doctor. I don't know if there was a little doctor, but
yeah,
that was a great story.
Yeah,
that was a very interesting account.
Yeah, because I've started getting these cartoon stories from people, which is another disturbing thing.
I love those.
People are saying, yeah, I saw a cartoon person. The one I had, and it was years ago at this point, so I can't remember what episode it was. And it was a guy, it was either under a porch or under a trailer. I forget what it was, but he said this cartoon's like beckoning him under. I'm like, oh, he didn't go.
So creepy.
As a child. Yeah, it's like, but how do you appeal to a child? Oh, I'm turning myself into a cartoon.
Right. And with all the Disney movies that were talking about magic and fairies and all that and stuff, it was making it normalized to kids, the crossover, and they knew that they could mask themselves as a cartoon like one of those Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
So with it being so seemingly rare at this point, how does it feel to to hear a similar story. Did it resonate?
It's incredibly interesting. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, wasn't the same story, and we have slightly different interpretation, but I mean, there's so much in common between them. It's like, wow, that is really interesting to hear. Mm-hmm. From
the overlap is insane.
Yeah. Like when Alex was describing, that's why one of the first questions I asked is how many, and you know, he said three, never more, you know, never one.
Three at most. No.
Yeah. And it was definitely three for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that continues to be, I have one that I think there were two, but usually it's three entities when they appear for me.
And it's interesting because there's a line in the Bible that talks about where there are three or more gathered, I am there. They're talking about like you have more power in threes. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I heard somebody else mention like something like, and I'm getting the quote wrong, like the fairy queen and her attendants or something, like it's always three, you know, it's like mm-hmm. somebody else said the guardian at the threshold, there's always three. So mm-hmm. I think this mm-hmm. is a common theme, like it pops up.
Mm-hmm.
Three's the magic number.
Yes.
I don't know if it applies here, but I have also heard it happens a lot when there's a group, there's kind of like a leader and then, I don't know, kind of peons almost. And I don't know, a doctor and nurses would kind of.
Yeah. Like there seemed to be one and he was slightly taller than the other two for me.
Yeah. That comes up a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. It seems like there's one that's always a little taller and that's like the boss. And then there's the two that are a little shorter. That comes up all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's comes up in something I'm working on now too. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. And again, for me, it's like, that's a detail that I didn't put together till later. It was definitely the case. The one in the middle was taller. And on either side, they were kind of shorter.
Mm.
It was weird. It was a weird thing. But not, they weren't like immensely shorter, but he was definitely taller than the other two.
Yeah.
Did he have a sense of superiority over the other two?
It's hard to tell. I was, like I said, I was so, he definitely seemed to be the guy doing the work, you know, whatever that was. And the other two, I don't know if they were observing like your other story you read there.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I don't know what they were doing, or, you know, and the snippets I remember, you know, when I was awake and saw these things are very brief. It was very brief. Like saw them, they were there, got mad, boom, out, woke up again, you know, same kind of thing. A couple seconds each time, maybe no more than 3 to 5 seconds, probably each time. But I was waking up repeatedly, maybe five times, you know, throughout the night or whatever. Every time I wake up, they would be there.
It's interesting that even interdimensional anesthesia doesn't work on you.
I have no clue. I do wonder if it's related though. I do wonder.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, there's something about it. I'm sure you can relate, Tim, where it's like, it's a part of the human brain. But when you find a repeating theme mm-hmm. in stories, you're just like, I got to collect them.
Oh, yeah.
Like Flannel Man. So, you know, I found just these two. And then now this third one that I found of these little doctors, I'm like, I feel like I need to collect them, what we have, at least for now. And maybe there'll be more.
Yeah. Got to catch them all.
Yes. We should post a thread on Reddit and try and get more. It'll be interesting.
I don't want to lead people. I don't want to get false accounts. I'm a little weird, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Yeah. That's it's, you got to be delicate with this stuff I've found and kind of let them come to you, but I believe they will.
Yeah.
I believe they will.
I mean, you made the connection between reading my story from Fairy Senses,
mm-hmm.
hearing my story on the Fairy Whispering podcast, and then made that connection. And I had put those accounts out like a year and a half apart. I had no idea what I had forgot I had even written into the Fairy Sentences, to be honest. I didn't even know it was in there. So when you wrote me and was like, I heard your story and I read it on my podcast, I was like, wait, what? I didn't even remember I put that out there, you know? So it was like interesting that you made that connection and there was even enough similar details for you to make that connection.
It just really, that story really stuck out to me. I think in particular that it was in the Fairy Census. I was just so intrigued mm-hmm. that because it doesn't have overt fairy themes. So right. I'm not saying it shouldn't be in the Fairy Census. My favorite ones are ones that are more abstract. Yes. There's some really weird ones in there. So Yeah, very cool to get to talk to you about it. And Tim, yeah, thank you.
Give me the weird sightings. Give me all the weird stuff. I love it.
Exactly. The weirder, the better.
Same. We all thrive in the weirdness.
And these ones definitely, they just have that high strangeness factor to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's so hard, especially in my, you know, my early journey through the paranormal. I didn't want to put everything in a box. You know, there are UFOs and there are little men that drive the UFOs, and then there's Bigfoot, and then there's ghosts, and then, you know, and so it was kind of wrestling with this. And then, I don't know, it just sits better when I connected it all together. It's just like, okay, this is all part of the same, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, I like your attitude towards it a lot.
Mm-hmm. It just feels connected. They use the same language in a sense, you know, and I don't mean literally, but this is language of symbols, I guess.
And you've been fortunate to spend time around Indigenous American people, and do you feel like it's kind of, they kind of have a similar attitude? We can't speak forever. It's not generalizing, but
I mean, again, I, you know, everything I talked to them. So I was invited to Pine Ridge Reservation last year, and a beautiful, wonderful time collecting stories, and everything they talked about, you know, whether they would talk about the, what they call the wee wee low, their little people, or Bigfoot, I would ask them at the end, like, well, what do you think was? Oh, it was a spirit.
Yeah.
You know, so they will talk about, and this is one thing I think modern culture probably misses a little bit. And it might be partly because we want to put things in boxes, and it might be partly because we've lost this understanding. You know, we think of spirits, we think of these ethereal things that can't touch or move things, but no, these are very real, very physical things, but they're also spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to them, it's like, you know, they're describing things, you know, Bigfoot's throwing motorcycles and busting into people's, you know, trailers and doing all this crazy stuff. It's like, but no, it's a spirit. And that's something I think we lost. Like, well, spirits can't do that. Spirits can't leave footprints. Yeah, they absolutely can. Ghost hunting in the 1950s, they'd throw out powder on the floor and wait till footprints appear. We're doing the same thing in the woods with Bigfoot. It's just with mud instead of powder. You're just waiting for footprints to appear. So that's a really hard concept, I think, for people to sort of get that, like, no, these things can be physical and they can move things and touch things and leave footprints. And, but then they're also very ephemeral. They're here and then they're not, you know, that leads to the, you know, interdimensional stuff. These theories, maybe that's right. Maybe not. I don't think so, but whatever, you know, I can't prove it's not, but I understand why people go there, because these things do, they come here, they're physical. They knock on trees, they knock on windows, they leave footprints, and then they disappear. Mm-hmm. And they're not here. So I, you know, and it's a very elegant explanation, you know, oh, it's, they're coming from another dimension and going back there. We'll see. I just think spirits have the ability to become physical if the conditions are right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We just overthink everything. And we also think that we know everything. And I just, listening to those episodes you did at the Pine Ridge and listening to, like, Lodge Tales, the podcast, and mm-hmm. hearing that perspective, it's just unquestioning and accepting. Right. It's so refreshing.
Yeah, there's no question to them. Like I said, I met one guy on Pine Ridge who I would say was a skeptic. Interesting, though. I don't believe in that stuff, talking about Bigfoot, and then he describes a big UFO in the sky he saw to me. But anyway. But he was, you know,
people always amaze me.
He's, you know, I've been a hunter all my life, never seen anything, don't believe in this. But he was the only one. Literally everyone else I talked to was like, yeah, they exist, they're here, and they tell me a story, you know. It's so natural, and it's just like, of course, it's here, you know. It's not, there's no question about it, you know, at least in the general culture, I think. It's like the reality of this stuff is like, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, and as people in Western, modern, European American society can have an experience and still say, I don't believe in that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've had it. So many people. Mm-hmm. And, or, you know, doing what I do, I'm very fearless about asking, you know, to meet someone at a party or whatever. I don't go right there, but in the course of our conversation, it'll come up, you know, what I do. And I'll say, yeah, have you had any weird experiences? No. And then they'll get talking like, well, there was this one time. It's like, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you open the aperture to, like, dreams and things. They'll be like, yep. Oh, well, you know, I did have this weird dream.
Yeah.
We could have a whole episode about dreams, man. There's so much to talk about there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Definitely.
That's another book I want to write. I'm not even sure where to begin. Other than saying I feel like it's connected, but, you know, where do you go from there?
Right.
Any other thoughts on the little doctors for now?
No, I'm interested to see what turns up after this. Like I said, I feel like you're going to get more.
Yeah.
They'll come to you organically. I don't think you have to go looking. I think you'll get more, though.
Yeah.
I won't. That's how I want it to happen. Awesome.
I'm excited to hear them.
Yeah. Thank you for being so open with your experiences and talking to me about it. And it's a pleasure in answering my questions.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Let me know when you want to do that Bigfoot show. I love Bigfoot.
Okay.
I'll talk your ear off about Bigfoot.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
I will include links in the description for the episode of the Fairy Whispering podcast where Alex was a guest and talked about some experience he's had with fairies, and as well as some links to Alex's artwork that he does. And if you aren't aware of Strange Familiars podcast, I'm very excited for you because you have a backlog of over 500 episodes. And of course, Tim has beautiful artwork and music and books. So all that will be available in the description, of course. But Alex, thank you so much for being here tonight and sharing your story and being open about it.
It was an honor. Thank you for having me. And I love to tell my stories whenever I can. They're not stories to me. They're just, you know, parts of my life. So sharing them with you guys is vulnerable and scary, but also rewarding to hear other experiences that are familiar or seem similar to mine, because I've never met someone else that had something else like that similar.
Some might say they're strangely familiar.
Very.
I was going to say that. Yeah, and you know, by you telling your stories, you said it's very vulnerable. I totally understand that, mm-hmm. but you are going to make people, it's going to resonate with people, and they're going to get something out of you being so open about it.
Yeah.
And that's what happens every time I listen to someone else's experience. I'm like, well, if they can do it, I can do it.
There you go. I truly believe every time somebody, you know, hears somebody else talk about it somewhere, somebody goes, oh, okay, I can share my story then. I'm not crazy.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And just validating people's experience too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Tim, I know you've told that story a lot on your own podcast, and you're a very busy man. So thank you for taking the time to tell that again and talk with us. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Great. All right. Well, take care and talk soon.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Well, what an amazing conversation that was. As much as it was about very real and very serious experiences that Tim and Alex had, I still found it to be just such an enjoyable discussion. And I hope you did too. The little doctors, man, who knows what's going on with that, but there's plenty of abduction experiences where people say it felt like a medical setting, but that's where they're on a craft, right? They feel like they're taken elsewhere, and they describe feeling like they're laid out on an operating table and there's beings around them. But there's something very specific about Alex and Tim and this person on your ghost stories encounters where they were in their bed and they saw these short statured doctors and nurses. Yeah, so I was just so fascinated, and it is so seemingly, as far as I'm concerned, unique that when I heard multiple accounts, I can't remember whose I heard first, Tim or Alex, but when I heard multiple accounts, it struck me, just the two of those, the similarities. And then when I found that third one on your ghost stories, I felt like I had to do this. So I do want to give a special thanks to Claire Casely, who's the host of the Fairy Whispering podcast, for connecting Alex and I after I heard him on her show. I also want to give a special thank you to Chris Woodyard, who I consulted about the costume. Well, what I now know are costumes, but the clothing or the uniform that the doctors were wearing in different experiences, because she is a fashion historian. So I knew she would know. So I sought her out, just trying to get an idea of the era of when these uniforms would have been implemented. And turns out they never were. So that was very interesting. So special thank you to Chris Woodyard. If you aren't familiar, she is an author of many books on ghost lore and Victorian mourning customs. And she's also the co-host of the Boggart and Banshee podcast with Dr. Simon Young. And of course, I just have to say thank you again to Alex and Tim Renner for coming on and sharing their stories and taking this time to have this incredible discussion. And thank you to you for listening. I hope that you found it interesting as well, and definitely let me know what you think. So that's going to wrap it up for now, but I will be back very soon with some more stories and encounters and legends. So until next time, take care and good night.